What's going on, Titans? We are back with another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, and we're glad you could join us. I'm your assistant lifestyle editor, Kabir Kansara, and I'm here with...
What's up? It's Jaden Lovelady, the lifestyle editor.
And today we're going to be walking through volume 116, issue number 13 of the Daily Titan student newspaper. Today we're going to be covering a couple stories, including local politics from Opinion Desk, the CFA bargaining agreement and the ASI community chat, the lifestyle car club story, as well as an update on men's basketball.
All right, guys, I'm sorry to report there have been no rumblings in the town, no whispers in the streets.
No postings on the community bulletin. Town is afoot with quietness.
Afoot with quietness, some could say. But there is one cold, hard fact here, and that's that Luis Vizcaino, the opinion editor, made it all the way from his desk to this one to be our guest on today's pod.
I did. It was a long trek.
Oh, how was that commute?
Nothing.
Yeah, man, all 8 feet. Real tough journey. Glad you can make it, though. So tell us what you wrote.
I wrote a piece about partisan politics, but specifically in like local government, so in smaller legislatures. So that includes like city councils, special districts, which include like water districts, municipal services, school boards, too. They've seen a lot of partisan like attacks within themselves as well.
Can you tell us like what it was like writing the story? Like, who did you interview? What were the behind the scenes here?
So I interviewed Robert Robinson. He's a political science professor on campus, and he teaches more con law, but he also has a focus on the political development. He has a quote in the story that's about how when you're really partisan as a voter, sometimes you kind of lock yourself into a specific candidate and ignore the opposing party's candidate, which can make it really difficult for change. Because even if your candidate, say you're Republican, the Republican candidate or incumbent isn't really doing their job properly, you don't, like as a voter, if you're really polarized, you'll choose to just stick with that Republican rather than take a look at the Democrat or even third party independent, just because those other two options are immediately out. You just won't consider them because of you're only Republican.
It's kind of like people cheating themselves out of like good political leaders because they choose to stick on the side that they're already on.
Yeah. And in local politics, that can be really dangerous, or it's really...
Like it has more impact on the local community because it's like directly affecting you, or...
Yeah. Yeah. Like local politics is very nuts and bolts. It's very like we have to pay for the lights. We have to fix the streets. We have to, you know, make sure that the library gets its funding. So if that starts getting torn apart by like partisan things, so like if you have people who very strongly identify as Democratic and Republican in a city council, they might be pitting against each other because they say like, we might agree that we need to fix the potholes, but because you're Republican, I'm not going to let you get that win. It has to be the Democrats that get the win. Mm. So what that happens is that you get gridlocks and stalemates in local cities. Right. So yeah. People see that the pothole isn't getting fixed and they just, you know, they start losing trust in their local government. And that's because the partisanship play within the council is just making it so that like they won't agree on things, even though people voted for those candidates.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting like to hear the breakdown on such a small scale.
No, it's interesting because the history of the polarization that we've seen recently actually starts from the 70s. So it's really long history. Basically, there's a lot of political shifts between Democrats and Republicans. And during the 70s, you start getting to the point where Democrats aren't in power anymore. So that means that Republicans have a chance now. So elections are very close. It's very 50-50. So that incentivizes some politicians to start playing dirty. And so they start becoming more aggressive, and voters like it because, you know, like, oh, they're getting attention. So that started in the 70s, and the 80s it really started ramping up, and that started trickling down towards local levels because it began in Congress towards, like, around the 90s. Right. So during that period, you saw more of that, like, aggressive tactic fall to smaller governments. So at the local level, in District 4 for Fullerton's elections, you had candidate Scott Markowitz, who was disqualified when he pled guilty for a misdemeanor in collecting signatures for his candidacy. And part of his platform was kind of like America First, which is very tied to like MAGA and Republicans. And with just kind of that, even though he wasn't able to like continue running, he got 10% of the vote. So like 979 votes just with that. And that can be like a big spoiler in small levels. But that kind of appeal towards just the polarization, like clearly just that platform was enough to get 979 people to vote for him, even though if he had won, it would have called for a special election, things like that.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting how like these kinds of campaign platforms that people build off of on like the national partisanship of like picking sides and things like that, I feel like it kind of like makes people lose focus a bit of like what the actual form of like local office is about. Because at the end of the day, it really is like public servitude in terms of like returning to the community, like the benefits that you've reaped from it and like making sure the community is like instilled with good. So to kind of push along these like national, like not programs, but like platforms of like America First and things like that, and these sort of like Republican or Democratic ideologies, bringing that like national ideology down to a local level kind of cheats people out of like the ability to choose the best politician because they're like polarized by the idea of like, I have to pick a Dem or I have to pick a Republican.
Yeah. And when you have like a slogan or just part of your platform being America First, what does that even mean in the context of the city of Fullerton?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What are you advancing? What would you do that would be America First in Fullerton?
Right.
And that also brings up the question of, like, what is the point of having just the partisan platforms? Because it can be used as a mask for your actual policy solutions, because that's a really big thing, right? Like, local representatives are supposed to be doing, like, hard work. Like, school boards are supposed to be deciding the funding that each school gets, the way that resources are distributed. Water districts are supposed to be managing, you know, water supplies, where the water goes, how to preserve it, how to treat it. So if those candidates start running on platforms like America First, it's just like, okay, well, what does that mean? Like, how are you going to treat the water? How are you going to pay for the streets? Like, what are you actually going to do?
It's all like smoke and mirrors in a sense. And it's annoying. Like, just, I mean, I feel like a lot of college kids can like echo this, but like, coming into the cognizance of being like a voter, like an actual adult now, it's crazy how much you realize like they just spin people in circles.
Yeah. And like for local races, it's pretty common for, you know, like business owners to try to run for office because they can then kind of get themselves or just the business community better taxes or like lighter things. So that's like more special interest. The point of the piece is more of just the partisan aspect of it, of just saying that, again, like America First, like how does that translate to fixing the street?
Right. I thought it was a really interesting point that you brought up towards the end of the article, that like a lot of times it comes from like inflammatory content being on people's social media or like the internet, and how the algorithms will push it even further because they're so integrated into like showing specific things to a specific audience, and that can be people's like main source of information, which is, it just drives this whole partisanship further because then the people themselves are pitted against each other as well.
Yeah. And then it only expands on other people because the engagement that post might get of like, oh, this is wrong, this is incorrect. But then all the people in the comments of like fighting over whether it's wrong or whether it's right and things like that only push it onto more people's profile of like, oh, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And then more and more people get kind of like infected with this like contagious misinformation that's going.
Yeah. And that like that reliance on social media goes hand in hand with news deserts. So a lot of like cities and towns don't really have local outlets that can keep an eye on things, or not even, it doesn't even have to be like a super critical eye, just saying that like city council they did this, or representatives have been doing this. It's just those kinds of things. And you know, the point of journalism is also to simplify really complex matters so that the broader public can understand it. So when you have city council meetings that might have like layers, kind of like Walk on Wilshire, you know, like you have a history of it being delayed, and then you have like a special vote on top of a regular vote. And it's just layers like that that have to be broken down and explained by journalists that social media can't really do.
Yeah.
And that, you know, algorithms promote things that are inflammatory and things that are going to get engagement and not necessarily things that are going to take a nuanced look. And that can polarize people. You know, you see something like Walk on Wilshire and you see like a certain group voted against it or continues to vote against it, and you don't see all the layers in it.
And that's why things like DT Pod are so important, people.
Well, I also want to mention voters have a big point in this, too. a lot of local governments tend to have the issue that there's very low turnout. And there's multiple reasons for that. Some district elections don't happen the same day as like the national election day. So like for District 4, or not District 4, but for the city of Fullerton, its election, like the ballot was in the same day as like the national one. So that makes it easier for people to vote because you just go in once and you can knock everything off the list. Some places don't have that. And that makes it difficult for people to kind of muster up the motivation to actually go. And then on top of that, cities tend to have just in general lower turnout. And that can really affect the way that representatives behave themselves, because if the people that actually turn out are the ones that are going to support and like rally around partisan issues, then representatives are going to act partisan. So it really depends on how people react to them and who they support.
So it's sort of like a voter's responsibility to also be actively engaged in the politics, because they can't expect the politics to always engage them.
Yeah. Yeah. Like politicians are going to cater to the people who vote for them reliably. So if the people who vote reliably for them are really polarized and partisan, then those representatives are going to be really polarized and partisan.
Luis, I think your time on stage is done here.
Yeah. I'm excited to start my trek back to opinion.
Yeah, long journey you got ahead of you, man.
Long journey.
Get moving, buddy.
Yeah.
See you next week.
Right. Line.
I'll see you guys.
Hey Titans, this is Emily Wilson, Editor-in-Chief of the Daily Titan, wishing all of you a safe and happy Thanksgiving. Daily Titan coverage will resume on December 4th when we come back from Thanksgiving break. Thank you for listening.
You know, guys, in a very 2014 LeBron-esque move, Emily Wilson, our editor-in-chief, actually decided to return to DT Pod because she just missed us so much.
I am back. And you know what? You guys are like Kyrie Irving, that's you, Kavir, and Kevin Love, Jaden Lovelady. Do you see the vision?
Wait, I see the vision. Yeah, you kind of ate with that one.
But I have written a story once again that I'm here to talk about.
Once again.
Man, shoot, more?
Guys.
Yeah, I mean, I like being a journalist. What can I say?
No way.
What?
What did you write about? For what desk?
For news.
No way.
I wrote about the CFA, which is the California Faculty Union, and the CSU opening contract negotiations again, which they're set to do this week at the trustees meeting.
When was the last time they opened contracts?
So this is the first time in a while, in about 3 years, that they've done bargaining for a new deal. You might have remembered the faculty strike from last semester.
I recall a thing or two.
Yes.
So that bargaining cycle, it was what's called a reopener agreement. So they were just bargaining over the last year of their contract, and they were only bargaining over a few articles. This time, all 41 articles are up for renegotiation. So the process could take longer.
Yeah.
Would this like mean like maybe a longer strike on campus?
There may not be a strike at all. It just depends on when... if and when CSU management and CFA bargaining, who's on the bargaining team, agreed to a deal. And I talked to Gregory Chris Brown, who is actually a professor at Cal State Fullerton, and he was on the bargaining team for the reopener agreement last year. And he said that he's very pessimistic right now with the way that it's going to go, or the way that he thinks it's going to go. CSU management is very... I was on last week, talked about the fiscal state of the university, right, and the fiscal state of the CSU.
Yeah.
And I discussed how Gavin Newsom is considering an 8% cut, essentially, to the CSU. So faculty, they really want pay raises, but the CSU is concerned about their fiscal stability, which is probably going to be a major theme of the negotiations. What they're doing at the trustees meeting this week is they're adopting what's called sunshine proposals, which is basically like initial agreements, like where each party can be like, hey, here's what we're wanting to prioritize. And it's in pretty vague terms.
Okay.
They won't start officially negotiating like face to face until the spring. So part of the sunshine proposals, which is the initial proposals that they're submitting this week, they are kind of in vague terms, especially for the CFA side. And that's because this week, up until this Friday, faculty will be able to complete a survey that the CFA puts out, kind of talking about things that they want to prioritize for the bargaining, specifically,
yeah.
Like different issues they're facing.
Yeah, I read in the article there was a piece about increasing the improvements for faculty who identify with like marginalized groups. Like, how would that kind of be counted towards, or like, How would, like, would it be a self-identify process, or how would they identify, like, which professors need the most resources and, like, which groups need the most aid?
Probably the biggest kind of group that benefit from is low-income faculty, because a lot of lecturers, which the CSU classifies as temporary faculty, they work paycheck to paycheck. They have to work often two or three jobs to make ends meet. And they would benefit from more resources from the CSU. I think the biggest thing to, for students to think about this, I think the biggest phrase that I kind of think about is the CFA. One of their kind of slogans is faculty working conditions or student learning conditions.
Yeah, right. Because if you feel like the best option for your work environment or for the better of it is to disengage from your work environment, mm-hmm. that doesn't say much about the work that gets done in the environment.
Right. And for the last agreement, the one that caused a strike, it was a 10-month process. Right. And that was just bargaining over four articles. So now all of them could be negotiated, and they have to, the contract expires in June 2025. So if they don't have a deal by July 2025, like, the CFA has said that they'll explore all options, including a strike. So it may happen again.
Mm. You know, Emily, while we got you here, there is another news story on our desk. The ASI community chat that happened recently. You have any thoughts you want to impart on us real quick?
Yeah, I thought this community chat was super interesting because for the first time in a while, they included university admin.
I heard they also had like some kind of online section for students to partake as well.
Yeah, not all students can make it to campus, so there was an option for them to comment and have their voice heard. And there were also a lot of members from the admin here, like the president, vice presidents, and the provost. One of the big things that's mentioned in the article is what the university planned to do about divestment relating to the Israel-Palestine conflict. Alex Porter, who is the vice president for admin and finance, he was there, and he talked about how tuition and fees are what, basically what students pay, are used solely for operational purposes. But the campus can still invest through the philanthropic foundation, which is based strictly off of donations, and is considered an auxiliary, so it doesn't really come from the same funding source that the rest of the university does. Those dollars can be invested in things such as mutual funds. According to the article, Porter did not really clarify if they had invested in Israeli companies, but there is a possibility. He just didn't really disclose that.
Beyond just the divestment talk, were there any other major takeaways or any other comments that kind of like spurred discussion at the community chat?
Yeah, there were a lot of different quick hitters. There were some about like internship coordinators, resources that CSUF has, ASI scholarships.
Yeah, I read in the article they were putting people on game about where they could find specific resources, especially for like students that deal with different changes and different like situations outside of campus as well.
Yeah.
I read in the article Roshan specifically wanted to like meet with undocumented students to kind of like figure out what resources could be allocated to them to like make sure their experience is a little bit more easy at CSUF.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Part of these events, part of them are to listen to what students have to say, but a lot of students' problems, either ASI or the admin are doing things to try to combat them. So it is a way for them to kind of plug what resources they do have.
Yeah.
But it's also a way for students to express maybe like some shortfalls with that.
Yeah. And on the topic of like different campus resources, they also mentioned like kind of what the Titan card can get you and things like that, like, you know, access to SRC, art shows and stuff like that. There are also different kind of budgets and things like that as well discussed. And I saw they mentioned food court changes. You have any ideas for what they should add, take away from the TSU?
Like, what would I personally like to see?
Yeah.
I know there's been talks about Chick-fil-A. I want to see a Cane's.
Mm.
They would have so much of my business. It actually, maybe I don't want to see a Cane's.
Cane's don't want to see you.
they really don't.
They hate to see me coming.
So maybe not, but maybe Cane's. Mm. I would never have a reason to leave. Anyway, I think I've talked about enough stories for you guys.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.
All right, guys. Whipping it on over to my favorite desk in the newsroom. So we're actually here to talk about the car club story we did on Fullerton Motor Group. Yeah, me and Kabir, actually me, I drove us out all the way to Apple Valley, okay, about 3 hours away. And on the way there, we found out that this place was in the middle of the desert, not paved roads, and a big chunk of my car fell off. Yes, it did.
Yes, indeed.
Yes, indeed it did.
We salvaged it.
Yeah, and it's sitting in my back seat right now. So, but we got a really good story out of it. So, hey, you know,
I'm sorry about your car, but I had a fun time out there. I'm not going
to
lie.
Yeah, hey, me too.
Like, it was pretty enjoyable.
Basically, it was really cold, though.
Yeah. Basically, It was just a great time. The Fullerton Motor Group rented out a track in Apple Valley to have a track day for their members. So it was an event that they not only like ran and like promoted, but it was something they oversaw as well, down to like, you know, car inspections, vehicle inspections before they hopped on the track. So Fullerton Motor Group has been around on campus for a little bit, but they've wanted to get more active with like engaging in campus and like promoting that kind of commuter culture that we have.
Yeah.
So this is like a great way for them to bring the community together.
It was also just really cool for them to like care so much about the safety aspect of it too.
Yeah.
Like, I know the president of the club, he spoke on how like Fullerton PD actually enjoys their presence because they're so respectful of the community around them.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not like super, super deep into cars, but I do have an appreciation for them just because like there is a level of artistry that goes into making a machine like that.
Oh, absolutely.
So kind of seeing how everyone took that machine and made it their own in terms of like coilovers, camber, things like that. It was really cool to see how everyone kind of made their car theirs and showed off with that.
Yeah, there was some cars out there. Like there was one that was like iridescent pink. Man, that was so cool.
There was like some...
There was a Miata that had the roof removed.
Yeah.
Man.
He was going crazy on the track too.
Y'all are cool.
There were some modified Corvettes, a couple Mustangs out there as well. And it wasn't just a track as well. They had a skid pad out there too. So you got to see people doing burnouts, you know, testing out their tires, testing out their suspension, things like that. So it was just an overall really cool event to be at.
As a journalist, you know, not everyone is really excited to talk to you all the time or really like... appreciative of like what you're trying to do there, but like these people really were, and it was really cool.
But like it was just really cool to see how invested people were, not only in themselves but into like in each other as well, like making sure everyone's kind of being safe, everyone's kind of being like on game about being on the track. Like I saw a lot of people like waiting for their turn to enter the track and things like that, and making sure like they weren't too close to people, making sure they had like minding the gap, everything like that.
Nick, the president Nick, he was like cool enough to have us do a ride along on the track with him.
Filming. We were done for the day. We were ready to go and everything. And then before we headed out, he was like, "Oh, do you guys want to do a quick ride along?" So he took us one at a time on the track, which was insane.
Yeah, I wore a helmet that was like probably weighed more than my actual head. I was like swinging around in there like a bobblehead. The track was so twisty and turny. I felt like I was in a go-kart.
Stepping out of our front office, aka the newsroom, and into our court, aka the break room, we have Sergio Gonzalez, our sports editor / sports correspondent, here to talk about men's basketball for us. Sergio, what's the update?
So we just lost this past Friday. We're now 0-4.
Ooh.
Yeah, lost to Oregon State on the road.
On the road?
Yeah.
Man, cold weather and cold shots from up there or what?
Pretty much. That was the moral of the story.
Man.
Tough. Yeah.
Were there any standout, like, moments or players or moments from the players?
Freshman Davis Bynum off of the bench led the team in points, actually.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Shout out.
Went 5-for-9 from the field.
Do you have any, like, hopes for the team as they come back home?
Well, it was a tough road trip because they did play some pretty like good schools.
Oregon, who was there?
There was Colorado, Stanford, and Grand Canyon.
Ooh,
and Grand Canyon won. They won a NCAA tournament game last year.
So. Oh, wow. Okay. What are the upcoming challenges they have on their schedule?
They got to face UCLA next, actually.
Ooh.
And they were ranked at the beginning of the year, so that's going to be a tough test.
Yeah, definitely.
On the road, too.
Dang.
Playing a lot of road games.
Yeah.
Yeah. 7 of their first 8 games are on the road.
Wow.
That's a lot.
What are they running from?
I don't even know. Like, why can't we play at home?
Okay. Obviously, besides the Titans, who do you think has the hardest mascot?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't know why, but I think of Aztecs, San Diego State.
Yeah. That low-key is pretty hard. Yeah. I think of the banana slugs. That's just ridiculous,
that one's
bro.
Fire.
That's fire.
Lie. Yeah.
I think a lot about the cougar from BYU. Mm. The costume don't even go that hard. But have y'all seen the clips? That mascot. They just did a like backflip over a moving golf cart.
I saw that.
And hit their head and then got up and continued going.
For real.
Yeah.
All right, Titans. It's looking like that's it for us today. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. What you can do, however, is pick up a copy of the Daily Titan or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned and many more. Thank you all for listening, and as always, if you like us, we love you.
All right, Titans, you know what time of the episode it is, but more importantly, know what time of the year it is. It's really time for us to get thankful around here. So first of all, I want to start it off with a big special thank you to our executive producers, Isaiah Malari and Emily Wilson. I want to give a big old thank you to our producer, Luis Vizcaino, and another big old thank you to our assistant producers, Raniel Santos and Michelle King. Another big thank you to Bijan Shusterizade for providing the music that we use in this episode and all others. And I want to give a big thank you to all of y'all for listening and tuning in for us. If you want to stay up to date with DT and what we do over here, make sure you grab a copy of that paper while you're out on campus and check up on dailytitan.com. I'm Kabir Kansar, and I'm saying thank you to all of y'all. Catch y'all next time.